Our worst enemy has no country. They are everywhere and nowhere. They wait and then they attack. This flag is the symbol that unites them, the Al-Qaeda flag. President Obama thinks killing bin Laden was the demise of Al-Qaeda.
I said we go after Al-Qaeda and bin Laden. We did.
This stands in stark contrast to the bloody reality we saw on September 11th this year, where Al-Qaeda terrorists successfully attacked U.S. embassies in Egypt and Libya, resulting in the death of our ambassador and three other Americans, and a new flag was raised over U.S. soil, the Al-Qaeda flag, a symbol of hate and evil, raised on the anniversary of our worst moment. Despite the overwhelming evidence, Obama failed to recognize the nature of the attacks for over 2 weeks.
I was pretty certain and continue to be pretty certain that there are going to be bumps in the road.
These protests were in reaction to a video.
Over an awful internet video
that was sparked by this hateful video.
Protests that arose because of the outrage over the video.
And when I look at what's happening in Libya, there's a big song and dance about whether this was a terrorist attack or a protest. And you just want to scream, for God's sake. Are you kidding me?
I don't know. They haven't told me anything. They're still studying it. And the things that they are telling me are just outright lies.
And today, Al-Qaeda's on its heels, and Osama bin Laden is no more.
He decimated Al-Qaeda Central.
After weeks, Obama now says he'll get to the bottom of what happened. Had he been paying attention? He only needed to look at the picture of the Al-Qaeda flag desecrating our ground. Obama is in way over his head. As our enemies know, Obama's policy for embracing Islamists in Libya and elsewhere has empowered Al-Qaeda and other Muslim militants with his apologies, weakness, and excuses. Are we safer? Clearly not.
I tell him, please, don't give me any baloney that comes through with this political stuff. I don't want political stuff. You can keep your political. Just tell me the truth. What happened?
Welcome all to Freedom Quest. I'm Eliza Jane, and we have Lucha on as my co-host. That was from an audio that I found describing what went on with Benghazi Gate and or Libya. And I got to tell you, it was quite appropriate considering we were doing the title of this show was supposed to be Dereliction of Duty, and it was supposed to cover a whole host of presidents and administrations and all that went on in the past years. But I'll tell you, with the Benghazi hearing today, I think there is so much we can cover that it'll probably stay pretty close to the hearing and everything that went on there, because I am so fired up. I was at work trying to listen to it, and doggone it, if they didn't keep coming in my office and I kept trying to keep the door closed. Oh, Lucha, it just frustrated me because I wanted to listen and hear it all. I am so fired up from what I heard from the Democrats, and so fired up to hear the Republicans actually attack the core of the issue. Is that kind of, what do you think, Lucha?
Oh, girlfriend, I'll tell you what. I watched the whole hearing, and you're going to get a blow-by-blow almost account from me. I took copious notes, and then after the hearing, I mean, it was inching closer to the time for the show, and I was like, okay, the hearing can end, because I got to go over these notes and see what I got. So I have these different colored highlighted markers, and I took just up until right before showtime. I was going through it really fast, going, okay, what, because, I mean, this is 5.5 pages of notes, you guys. And
oh, my goodness.
So I was trying to highlight. I kind of got it color coordinated with the different things of what's important. So, yeah, I'm ready. You go first.
All right. Well, let me concede to Holger. Holger from Monday night couldn't find my links that I remember seeing about a year or so ago on the Koch brothers, so I concede. You are the master, you are the grandmaster, and I concede. And my source, my reliable source said, who? Koch brothers, who? So for any of you that was on the Radio Jihad Vito and Al show Monday night, I concede the Koch brothers, I guess, are not who I thought they were. So please forgive me for spreading wild rumors, but I will. I was pretty sure. I'm going to have to get with my source and get with a new source. So I am sorry, everybody, if I led you down the wrong path. And so I just wanted to make sure that if I'm wrong, I'm going to admit I'm wrong.
Good
anyway.
Girl. And props to Holder. He knew. He actually knew what he was talking about this time. What?
Media strikes again. Oh, gosh. Well, I'll tell you what, this whole Benghazi gate and dereliction of duty, it truly fits, doesn't it? It just truly fits. Dereliction of duty, this full administration, he can't blame this one on Bush, but I know he'll try. And what just blew my mind, my head kept exploding, blew my mind was the Democrats. Again, I was just kind of half-hearing and trying to – I had my tablet right beside my keyboard at work, and I'm listening and watching. But anyways, the Democrats maybe you got a different impression, but every time one of them got the time to speak, they didn't do anything to question these three witnesses in terms of what went on. They were more concerned about all of the attacks on Clinton – and Rice and yep. Obama, and all they could do was complain and say, gee, come on, what are you doing attacking this great administration? That's all they did.
That's what I took away from it, even early on in the hearing, even just a few hours into the hearing. I noticed, and I was being fair about it. I was seriously being fair. But for the most part, the Democrats were giving speeches, and the Republicans were asking questions.
Exactly.
That's what I took away from it. The Democrats were giving speeches and even attacking ISA. And, yeah, they were mostly giving speeches. There was a couple that did ask some questions. But for the most part, they gave speeches and the Republicans asked questions.
They were afraid they didn't have enough papers in advance to be able to read everything. And it's like, okay, come on.
Oh, let's I got a good one on that one. Yeah, let's get down to it.
Go ahead. There's so much here.
You go first. You go first.
There is no go first. It's just let's just fill the airwaves. What I really took away from it were a couple of key things. One, of course, that they were silenced. They literally were silenced, and the only order that could be given to silence them was straight from Clinton. If this doesn't muddy her ticket for the next election, then for her running for president, then I don't know what will. Of course, Obama got away with a whole cartload of stuff. I'm going to try and be nice here. And still got back in office. If this doesn't do it to hamstring her and put her back in her place, I don't know what will. But essentially, there were a couple of things. One, that they said that I can't remember who it was. It was asking. Was it Jacob Chavitz was asking, I believe, the question. Why was Chris Stevens over there at the timeline that he was? What was the key factor to make him be over there during that timeline? And it was because Clinton wanted to make sure that the consulate over there was a permanent facility. It was designated a temporary facility, and somehow there was some funding available that had to be designated by September 30th. He originally was planning to go in October. Amazing timeline. He had to be there in September, but why September 11th? He knew it was dangerous. He had asked for backup. He had asked for all kinds of extra assistance over there. And was declined. Why would we want a permanent facility, a consulate over there? it doesn't. They were trying to say that it was friendly all around, that they had settled down after getting rid of Gaddafi. Excuse me, my voice is still cracking. The other one is that the Counterterrorism Bureau was never alerted. Well, they were alerted, the Counterterrorism Bureau, but apparently there's a division that deals with crisis, and they were not alerted.
Yep.
Two key factors. You're telling me that the Counterterrorism Crisis Unit didn't have any contact whatsoever? Dereliction
yeah.
of duty. I've come up with a new term, D of D, almost DOD, dereliction of duty. We'll just say DOD. Unbelievable. Go ahead. I'll let you spew some information, Lucha.
Well, I worked hard on this all day. I was watching the hearing all day, and I took notes all day.
Well,
so
that's why I
want
to give it to you.
Oh, no, I'm getting a weird message. I hope my – are you? Am I still on?
Yes.
Okay, I just got a weird message on my thing. So if my Skype drops off, I'll call right back in. But
okay.
As long as I'm still on, here goes your blow-by-blow account from someone who was watching and writing all day. All right. Daryl Issa's opening statement was appropriate, and he did remember the victims who were murdered. And when Elijah Cummings, the ranking member, gave his opening statement, he seemed to express belief in the top political brass. He was being partisan and angry, was my take from that. And in his opening statement, he seemed to protect Dempsey, Clapper, Pickering, and Mullen. Okay, so we've got Mark Thompson, who gave his opening statement first. He's the acting Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Operations in the Counterterrorism Bureau team. Then Gregory Hicks, he's the Foreign Service Officer and former Deputy Chief of Mission in Libya, and Eric Nordstrom, who was the former Libyan Regional Security Officer from the State Department. Okay, in Mark Thompson's opening statement, he stated that he wanted to act now. His plane, he asserted that his plane is on alert to do just this mission, to handle a crisis such as this. So my question is, he said they train for it twice a year. So if his plane was on alert to do just this mission, then why was it not sent? In Gregory Hicks's opening statement, this guy, there's a lot, and my recount is going to go back to different points at different times because of the way the hearing went, and I didn't have time to clump it all into subject to each specific subject matter at a time. But Gregory Hicks does have a lot of testimony. And he has said, quote, "Until Benghazi, I loved every day of my job." And in his opening statement, he said that Obama and company, they expressed extreme confidence in him. He got all kinds of props. Even from the Libyan president, he speaks fluent Arabic. And at the end of his opening statement, he says in 1991, he swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution and that he was there to honor his oath. And I liked that statement. That tells mm-hmm. us something, that yep. he is there to honor his oath. And all three gentlemen were happy and welcomed any questions that anybody had of them. When Eric Nordstrom gave his opening statement, he got a little teary when he talked about the four that were murdered, but then he was determined. All right, so Hicks was Gregory Hicks. He was the Foreign Service Officer. He gave his opening statement, yeah, and ISA gave him as much time as he needed. I'm not sure. He took about 20 minutes and was going – I mean, he was the one that was there on the ground. Gregory Hicks is the one that was there on the ground. So at 9:45 Libyan time, which is, 6 hours before Washington time, he had a couple of calls on his phone from Christopher Stevens that said, "We're under attack." Okay, so Gregory called the ops center at the State Department, and then he also asked for assistance from the Libyan president. He talked to the annex chief to mobilize assistance from Tripoli. So at 9:45 is basically when the first phase began. The second phase began from about 11:30 p.m. to 1:30 a.m., and he had said that the Tripoli team, they left at midnight and they arrived at 1:15 a.m. And they kept bringing up AFRICOM and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he mentioned that there were troops ready to deploy from Aviano, and it took 2 hours to get to Benghazi. Why were they not sent?
Let me ask you a question. Did you get the impression they were trying to blame the lack of response on Ham?
Ham was mentioned.
General Ham?
Ham was mentioned a few times. Was General Ham, and I'm going to have some homework for y'all in the chat room.
But I got the impression they were trying to point the target at him. Why he didn't respond was because they were trying to lean the blame on him.
Was he head of AFRICOM or South AFRICOM?
Yes.
Okay, well then, yeah. That was going to be one of my homework questions, because I didn't get a chance to make sure that General Ham was the leader of AFRICOM at that time.
But he was told to stand down, and that's where I'm hoping they take some of this to actually interview him.
Oh, yes. We're asking, yeah. Oh, yes. He needs, the people that need to be interviewed after this or that need to appear at a hearing, the first one who needs to be questioned at a hearing is Lieutenant Colonel Gibson, because Hicks said that he was the one that was given a stand down order. Lieutenant Colonel Gibson was given the stand down order, and then later on in the testimony, they asked specifically who gave Gibson that stand down order, and Hicks did not know. And then he told Representative DeSantis, that's who you need to ask, Colonel Gibson, Lieutenant Colonel Gibson. So we need to hear from Lieutenant Colonel Gibson about the stand down order that he was given. And my question is, who gave him the stand down order? Was it General Ham or was it Rear Admiral Gouet, whatever his name is? Okay, so I'm at Hicks's opening statement. Now, there's a few important things that he says in this opening statement. When they got to phase three, he says there was three phases to the operation, to the whole, the whole chain of events. He said phase three begins with news that Stevens's body was recovered. And he said he wasn't sure which hospital that he was going to be taken to, but he heard that that hospital was controlled by Ansar al-Sharia. So they were going to take Stevens to a hospital controlled by Ansar al-Sharia. And at that point, Hicks testified, they thought that it would be a hostage rescue. And then there were 12:30 a.m. Twitter feeds from Ansar al-Sharia claiming responsibility. Hicks was in Tripoli at that time. He says during the night he was in touch with Washington. Hillary Clinton called him at 2 a.m. Libya time, which would be, 6 hours early would be, 8 o'clock Washington time? So he spoke, Gregory Hicks spoke to Hillary Clinton at 2 a.m. Libya time. Questions, what are we going to do, evacuate? He told her they were getting ready to evacuate. And Diane, I see you're asking in the chat room, what am I reading from? I'm reading from my own notes. I watched the whole hearing, and I took notes during the whole hearing. So I hope that answers your question. These are just notes that I took. And they're not very, they're the best notes that I could take.
They're very good notes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so Hicks did talk to Clinton at 2 a.m. Libya time, and he had said that they were preparing to evacuate. At 3 a.m., there was a call from Hicks got a call from the Libya Prime Minister that Stevens was dead, and he said that it was a very sad call. There was testimony in here about the Libyan president and the Libyans' reaction to this whole thing, and that's a whole different story, but I want to say that thanks, Diane. She was hoping to grab the article. I guess it's mine. And that the Libyan Prime Minister was very sad to report that Stevens had died. So Hicks called Washington, and something about the locals weren't there. And let's see. The Tripoli team had to stay at Benghazi Airport because there was no local escort. That's right. The Tripoli team was sent out at, 12:30 a.m. that night. Tripoli response team left at midnight, but they had to stay at the Benghazi airport because there was no local escort. All right. So we go on that the mortars landed on the Libyans. Hicks was careful. He did mention that the first mortars landed on Libyans, and the second round of mortars is what killed Glenn Doherty and Tyrone Woods. Two guys from Team Tripoli, they climbed on the roof and they carried Glenn Doherty and Tyrone Woods. I mean, they were dead, but they carried them down that ladder to safety. The defense attaché. Now that's a homework thing. Who was the defense attaché there? I heard many people mention the defense attaché. I'm not sure who that was. But he apparently persuaded the Libyans to fly their C-130 plane. Hicks also testified that Lieutenant Colonel Gibson was furious when he told Hicks that he didn't have the authority to go to Benghazi. The plane left without them. So we need to hear from Lieutenant Colonel Gibson. All right, so at this point, ISA called a break, and Elijah Cummings gives a speech. Now, what I found interesting in this speech that he gave, he's telling these three gentlemen, he says, and I have to apologize to the chat room. I'm reading my notes, so if you guys are saying hi to me or anything. Matter of fact, let me give a quick shout-out to the chat room, because hi, you guys. I'm reading these notes, and I'm trying to get through them as fast as I can. In our chat room, East Anglian EDL, Jeff, Freedom's Wings, Diane, Golf Dogs, Hold Your Awakens, Poppy, Red Fox Blogger, who is our Kel, Smoking in Texas, Storm Bites, and The Annoying Peasants. Thank you all for joining us. We love you guys, and we appreciate you being here.
Yep.
Do you want to jump in with anything before I continue, Eliza?
No, you've got the whole storyline, so you're doing really well. Mine's bits and pieces because all I could do is listen, you know, here and there, so you're doing good. I'll jump in when I've got a question or thought. Go ahead.
Okay, yes. Please feel free to jump in because I don't want to monopolize everything.
You're doing great.
Okay. So I was interesting when ISA called a break. He called a 10-minute break, and then Elijah Cummings gives a speech. And there were several Democrats and even one Republican that said kind of the same thing to these three gentlemen who were testifying. Elijah says, kind of condescendingly, we have to listen to y'all. We have to protect you, not only you, but your fellow employees. Was that a veiled threat? You know, he mentioned that there was several times that Democrats and one Republican said, mentioned protecting these witnesses from retaliation. And I don't know why, but I got the feeling that from Elijah Cummings anyway, it sounded like a veiled threat to me. I wrote that in my notes, a veiled threat. I had a weird feeling about that. So Elijah Cummings, he asks, he mentioned Dempsey again, who I have no respect for. He says, do you have any reason to question Dempsey's General Dempsey's account? Do you question Leon Panetta's testimony? So he was asking these guys. Okay, now let me insert here that the top military brass, Joint Chiefs of Staff Martin Dempsey, who needs to retire his uniform,
uh-huh.
and Leon Panetta, and then there was Pickering and Mullen, I think. These are the top military brass, but they've got their political appointees. I don't know if they're political appointees, but they're way up there. So they have kind of, they're protecting the administration. And so here you have Elijah Cummings asking these three gentlemen, oh, do you question these guys? Do you question, you know, these high up military? Well, heck yeah, if they're wrong. You know, okay, so then Trey Gowdy was the first one.
Sorry, he was great. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, oh, he always is.
He was so passionate when he was speaking. He just was, he was so mad. And just passionate that he wanted to know the facts. And I'm sorry, go ahead. I just love him.
Yeah, I do. I do too. But I don't have much on him. I was a little disappointed in his questions and then his second round of questions. But he's still passionate and he still asked some good questions. He was talking about the fact, he asked Hicks about the fact that there was no demonstration and that Rice directly contradicted the account. So my notes on that is that Trey Gowdy focused on Susan Rice's, Ambassador Rice's testimony and how that contradicted Hicks's testimony. Then,
I've got a question. Let me jump in real quick.
Sure.
A question, and a question for the chat room, too. I'm real curious. As I was watching it, I almost got the impression it was almost like a pre-planned, I'll talk about this piece, you talk about that piece, and almost a coordinated effort of saying, I'm going to cover this little block of information. Do you think they do that, or do you think they actually just come in fresh with their own set of questions and to attack the issues?
I bet you a core group of them do get together, and because they only have 5 minutes.
I know.
So, yeah, it did seem to me, you're right, Eliza, I agree with you. It did seem to me that, you know, different representatives asked a different set of questions, and that's smart.
I think so, too. That's why I think maybe he was given, you know, kind of that setup to cover. That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I am, too. I got that feeling as well.
Okay.
So then you had Carolyn Maloney next, and the questions went Republican, Democrat, Republican, Democrat, Republican, mm-hmm. Democrat, until the end, and there was some Republicans that asked questions in a row. But Carolyn Maloney is next, and I'll tell you what, I do not like this woman one bit. I've seen her speak at several different things, and later on in my notes, I've got something where she gets caught. She gets caught red-handed in what she was trying to do. Okay, so pretty much in my notes, they gave a speech, you know, and she seemed very partisan. She was worried about ISA attacking Clinton, and she was worried about Hillary. Her thing was Hillary's name being on the cable. You know, she brought up the fact she attacked ISA about Hillary's name, her signature, not actually being on that cable when ISA had said it was. So then you have Jason Chaffetz next. And he talked about the plane from Tripoli, and what came out of that questioning was that the U.S. military is not under Gregory Hicks's command. It was the military that was told to stand down. So who can tell the military to stand down? And South AFRICOM was mentioned. And then Chaffetz asked Hicks about General Hamm. So you're right, Eliza, you know, General Hamm and South AFRICOM are, you know, connected. And then they asked about, he asked Thompson about FEST. What did FEST, Federal Emergency Security Team, or I forget what FEST stood for. I didn't write it down.
I think you're right. Something like that, yep. I'll look it up. Go ahead.
Yeah, and asked if Thompson attempted to attend the senior meetings, and he was not allowed at the senior meetings. Then, Eleanor Holmes.
Here it is, Foreign Emergency Support Team.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Then Eleanor Holmes Norton was next. She said that Thompson won't talk to Democratic members. She tried to refute Thompson's testimony about the FEST team not being involved in the meetings. He says the Counterterrorism Bureau was involved, just not his team. Now, where that comes from is that she was trying to accuse Thompson of saying that the whole counterterrorism team was not involved. And that's not what he had said. It's just his particular part of it, which was the FEST team, was not asked to the meetings. And they are the ones that should have been asked to the meetings. So he admitted that, yes, the counterterrorism people were involved, just not his particular part of it. Then this is important. When Representative James Lankford came next, he asked about the security at the facilities, and it was found out that Tripoli and Benghazi did not meet the standards, and I wrote this in big letters because this is what, I don't have down who said this. It was one of the three gentlemen, but in big letters I have, the only person who could grant waivers for deployment to an unsafe facility was the Secretary of State.
Exactly.
Okay, so Tripoli and Benghazi were considered unsafe. They were below standards. There shouldn't have been a mission there if they couldn't have met the certain security standards that were needed for facilities such as those.
Right.
And the only person, it came out, that could grant a waiver for personnel to be deployed there was the Secretary of State, which would be Hillary Clinton. So she knew it was unsafe, and she's the one who said that they could be there anyway.
Yeah. She holds a lot of the cards in this. Obama's very guilty of everything as well. But like I said, if this doesn't take her down and make her go back into her rat hole, I don't know what will. Go ahead.
Exactly, because it's clear what happened. It's very clear what happened. Okay, and then let's see. Langford asked why Stevens was there, and it was to convert the embassy from temporary to permanent facility. Let's see. John Tierney came next, and he must be a Democrat. He gave a speech, because I have speech there. Then he attacks ISA, and then he asks Hicks, do you contest Director of National Intelligence Clapper's veracity? I mean, you know, asking these, do you, just like Elijah Cummings, do you attack right. the veracity of these guys, of these top military political brass? I don't, you know. Okay, so then you've got Jim Jordan next, and apparently Gregory Hicks, who was the Foreign Service officer and the former deputy chief of mission there, Hicks is a big part of this story.
Yep.
Okay, so apparently there was praise directly from Obama, and I forget who else. I didn't write down all of it, but there was a lot of praise given to Hicks from Obama and company about his performance.
He got a call. He got a call the next day or something from Obama congratulating him on the job well done. He got calls from Clinton. He got all kinds of praises from everybody in the top leadership advising him of what a great job he did. Pat on the back, 22 years of stellar service and recommendations and awards. And then once he became the whistleblower, it all started going downhill.
Yeah, all he did was ask a question. He got all kinds of praise until he asked why Susan Rice, Ambassador Rice, said what she said.
Right.
You know, that changed. He had a phone call with Beth Jones, is someone who's important. Now, this is a homework. I have a homework assignment for you guys in the chat room. This is one of my homework assignments. In one part of the testimony today, someone called Beth Jones assistant secretary to the Secretary of State, and then another person called her Hillary's chief of staff. So I'm not sure which position Beth Jones holds, but I would sure like to find out. Okay, so apparently Beth Jones, she has a lot to do with this story.
Do you find it curious, now that we're still on Clinton, let me just throw out a question for the chat room and for you. Do you find it curious that there's no mention of Uma Abedin in any of this activity? Nowhere.
Oh.
Not in print, not in any of the hearing today. She is not, and was she not like at her elbow every minute of the time that she was in office?
Good question.
Where's Uma Abedin in all of this?
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
Maybe they want to keep her behind the scenes?
There's some more homework for you in the chat room.
Huh.
Yeah, she's mighty quiet on all of this, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
I don't think they want her in the forefront too much. There's a lot about her and the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, I don't either. I think you're absolutely right. There's something hidden there and something under the covers of darkness. So keep going. You're doing a great job.
Okay, so Beth Jones, the closest one to Hillary Clinton, when she had a phone call with Hicks, that's when things started changing for Gregory Hicks. He simply asked a question. Why did Rice say what she said? Because that had a lot of effect in what was happening on the ground in Libya. That is primarily why the FBI couldn't get in there for 17 days, because Ambassador Rice effectively called the Libyan president a liar. He said that it was a pre-planned attack, but Ambassador Rice went out on those talk shows and said that it was due to a video. Okay, so Hicks's life started changing when he asked why Susan Rice said what she said. All right. And I think somebody mentioned in the chat, yeah, Smokey, until he spoke to Chaffetz without the State Department's lawyer, and that's a big part of what happened today, too, is that apparently two lawyers in the State Department told Gregory Hicks not to speak to Representative Chaffetz without a lawyer there. Isn't that interesting?
Well, did he say without an attorney? Maybe I missed that, but I thought he just period said do not, and they really tried to nail him down to did they actually say
Did you catch that part? They were really trying to nail him down to say that it was specific to an interview. Hicks kept saying, I was not allowed to speak to Chaffetz. Sorry, I can't say his name. Chaffetz for an interview. I was not to be one-on-one. But they were trying to nail him down. So did they specifically say that, or was it specifically that you couldn't be alone with him?
Two state lawyers told Gregory Hicks that they did not want him to meet with Jason Chaffetz in a personal interview without a State Department lawyer in attendance.
Yeah.
And Gregory Hicks had never seen that before in all his years of experience. As a matter of fact, there's testimony later on from ISA where, this is what ISA stated. This is later on in the hearing, is he made it clear that two lawyers from state told Hicks to breach protocol by not meeting with a congressional delegation one-on-one.
Yeah.
Apparently, that was the protocol, was that people in Hicks's position would meet with a congressional delegation or a congressman one-on-one. And these State Department lawyers apparently broke that protocol and wanted Hicks to only attend a meeting, a personal interview with Chaffetz, only if a State Department lawyer was there. All right, Cheryl Mills. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I messed up. Beth Jones is not the one that is closest to Clinton. It was Cheryl Mills that was closest to Clinton. Okay, so my bad. Sorry about that, y'all.
It's all right.
It was her phone call to Hicks, and she was upset that the state lawyer was excluded from the hearing. And that was because that state lawyer did not have the security clearance to be in that meeting. Okay, let's see. There was a Democrat, William Lacey Clay, was next. He asked Nordstrom if the ARB recommendations were good. That's one thing. Another thing that I took away from this hearing was that it seemed like a lot of the Democrats were focused on that ARB report. And they seemed to take that as gospel, the ARB report. Well, you know, if you've got a corrupt policeman, you know, in a police department, are you going to ask him to investigate himself? You know? I mean, come on now.
Of course. Why not, right?
Wow. And it appears that John Micah came next, and he asked Thompson if he was ever interviewed by the ARB, and he was never interviewed. Hicks's interview with them was incomplete. Mike Turner comes next, and he was, I think, the first one that brought down that there was two stand-down decisions. Who gave Gibson the order? That's what I wanted to come out. Well, it didn't come out at that time, but what was brought up was that Hicks said that the authority for the Special Forces team was transferred from Chief of Mission in Libya to General Hamm. So why was the authority for the Special Forces team transferred from the Chief of Mission to General Hamm? And then they went down from 14 people in the mission to 4. Oh, Poppy just messaged me that Beth Jones is the Acting Assistant Secretary for Near Eastern Affairs at the State Department. Thank you, Poppy. I love you, girlfriend.
Appreciate that, Poppy.
Okay, so they went down from 14 to 4, and I want to take a moment to put my own little spin on this, because this was interesting to me. From July 31st to August 31st, not only was security there denied, it was decreased. So Hicks testified that it went down when it got to under General Hamm, it was decreased from 14 to 4. Now, they knew 9/11 was coming up. They knew that things were getting worse there. I mean, the British consulate had pulled out. Red Cross has pulled out. So things are getting worse in Libya, but you're going to decrease your security from 14 to 4? Why? Why? Okay, now, in a gun-running scenario, you know, that if we think that the reason for all this was Obama running guns from Libya to Syria, well, I'm not sure why they would decrease their people there. I'm sure you'd want to increase people there for a gun running operation, and that may have still been going on. But Admiral Lyons has posited that Benghazi was a botched kidnapping attempt.
Well, let me
go ahead.
No, let me insert a couple of things. I'm looking at an article that identifies a little bit of the timeline and addresses kind of what you're talking about. May 26, Stevens arrives in Tripoli, the capital city of Libya, and sets up camp at the U.S. Embassy. And then last summer, Clinton first proposed a plan to then-CIA Director David Petraeus to partner on a gun trafficking program to arm the Syrian resistance and vet the rebel group and train fighters who would be supplied with weapons, according to the New York Times. Then June 2012, the New York Times reports that the CIA is operating a secret arms transfer program that sounds exactly like the plan Clinton developed with Petraeus. Suddenly, there is an influx of weapons and ammunition to the rebels. September 5, 2012, a Libyan ship called the Al-Intisar, the Victory, docks in the Turkish port of Iskenderun, carrying 400 tons of cargo, including many weapons such as rocket-propelled grenades, RPGs, and shoulder-launched surface-to-air missiles. Destined for Syrian rebels 35 miles away from Iskenderun. The ship's captain told the Times of London that the Muslim Brotherhood and the Free Syrian Army broke into a fight over the arms. September 10th, Stevens arrives in Benghazi, Libya, the location of the U.S. consulate about a mile away from the consulate is the CIA annex. Stevens plans to stay at the consulate for 5 days. His visit was supposed to be secret, but Libya-based extremists somehow learned of his arrival. Well, let me comment on that in a minute. September 11th, Stevens has an unusual meeting with Turkish diplomat consul General Ali Sait Akin. Fox News reported that the meeting was, quote, to negotiate a weapons transfer in effort to get SA-7 missiles out of the hands of Libya-based extremists. Now, how did Libya know that he was there? Well, in one of the statements, and maybe you remember this, or where did I read it, that Libya, that was one of the comments, where is it at? Obama administration, oh, here. The Obama administration has argued that the United States was depending on the Libyan government for security, despite knowing about high threat levels, waiving security standards, and approving diplomats' occupancy. Well, there you go. Am I wrong in thinking, gee, right there, it tells them exactly who's going to be there if the Libyan government is supposed to be the ones defending us? Sorry.
Yep.
I had to throw that in.
Oh, please. No, don't say sorry.
How stupid is this
whole
thinking process?
Well, I don't know. This is my own little spin. I mean, Admiral Lyons has come out and wondered about the botched kidnapping story. To me, that makes the most sense. It explains why security was decreased prior to 9/11. Okay, Mohamed Morsi was recently made the Egyptian president, and he is Muslim Brotherhood.
Right.
And right away, he started demanding that Obama release the blind sheikh. Okay, so you've got Obama's numbers plummeting a little bit before the election. You know, he needs to look good. And so, and especially with the period between July 31st and August 31st, there was that cutback in security. Why would there be a cutback in security at that time, especially with the increased security incidents going on there? So if Obama, if they were supposed to trade Ambassador Stevens for the blind sheikh, that would have pleased Obama's Muslim brothers, and
uh-huh.
that would have made him look good before the election. I mean, he could have, September 11th, the election's in November, he could have, you know, built it all up and, you know, kept Christopher Stevens in a safe spot, you know, until it came time for Obama to say, well, you know, this is what they're asking for. Why don't I just trade Christopher Stevens for the blind sheikh? That way the Muslim brothers get their man, Obama gets his man, and he looks good before the elections. So I don't know if we'll ever find that out, but that's what I'm kind of leaning towards, is that scenario. Whether it was that or just simple gun running, I don't know. But I don't know. That botched kidnapping thing, that sounds like something very believable. What do you think about that, Eliza?
Yeah, I think I've had that in the back of my mind for a very long time and had some discussions around it as well. The item that is very curious to me as well is why
why wouldn't somebody, if we're so buddy-buddy with Turkey, why aren't we asking, interviewing, talking to the guy that he had the meeting with just before he died? The Turkey, yeah, the big Turkey. What was his name?
Erdogan.
That's the leader of Turkey, but the what was I'll find it in a minute. The guy's name that I just read that met with the clandestine meeting that with Stevens just before the whole eruption of the Libya. Why isn't somebody talking to him?
Exactly. Well, because Turkey's not allowing Obama to do that. Don't you know Muslim Brotherhood controls Obama? He's only going to do what they allow him to do.
Consul General Ali Said Akin. Why aren't we pulling him into some kind of discussion? Yeah, but he's all buddy-buddy with Erdogan.
Yep.
So if he's so buddy-buddy with him, why aren't they asking this guy what the heck the conversation was about and being transparent on that? Somebody needs to get to this guy.
Yep.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I know, girl.
My head's exploded at least 40 times. I think I've used so much duct tape, I need 14 more rolls. These whistleblowers, I got to tell you, are brave souls, patriots, and I pray God watches over them.
Yep. All right.
How's the timeline going? Where are we at?
Okay, after Mike Turner asked about the Sandown decisions, him asking who gave Gibson the order, that didn't actually come out until later. Then you've got Democrat Gerald Connolly next. He tried to contradict Thompson. He was just ugly. He promised forceful intervention if there was any retaliation. He just got a little bit ugly. Then you have John Duncan that was next. And let's see, he asked Thompson the reason that he wasn't interviewed by the ARB, no given reason. He asked about security on 9/11, and he asked Nordstrom about the security on 9/11, and Nordstrom went back to who authorized the embassy employees, which, as was stated before, Hillary Clinton. My notes are running into each other.
That's all right.
Hillary Clinton is the only one that could have authorized embassy employees at an unsafe embassy. All right, and another thing that came out of this was these whistleblowers, even though they gave testimony, most of them anyway, to the ARB, they have not been allowed to see their own testimony, the classified report of the ARB. Okay, so then Jackie Speier, who was a Democrat, was next. I think she was because I have speech. She gave a speech, but she did say one good thing. She was troubled that General Hamm withdrew additional support. She asked about the State Department lawyer not wanting Hicks to have a personal interview with Chaffetz, and then she went on to promise that he would get his choice of deployment. All right. So then you have Patrick McHenry, and he was asking about the protocol for a protest. Did those people on the ground have a protest happened, is there a certain protocol that you followed? You know, was any mention, yeah, there's a certain protocol that we follow, we practice it. He asked about a YouTube video and asked if Hicks had reported a video. And then he asked Hicks if he would have said what Rice said, especially after hearing what the Libyan president said, and Hicks said no, but he was jumping up and down over what the Libyan president said. Now let me explain that, because this was a little bit big to me. Gregory Hicks was overjoyed when the Libyan president, at his own personal risk, now you have to understand, there's all kinds of chaos in Libya, all kinds of different factions trying to get control, you know, so the Libyan president, at personal risk to himself physically and politically, he goes to Benghazi that night. And he came out right away and said that it was a pre-planned attack. So Gregory Hicks said he was jumping up and down when he heard what the Libyan president had said. But then what happens? Ambassador Rice goes out on 5 shows and refutes what the Libyan president said. And that's what impeded the FBI investigation. It came out. So it seemed like Gregory Hicks especially was kind of, you know, it seemed like these guys, these witnesses, these whistleblowers, they were there on the ground trying to work with the Libyan people and the newly forming Libyan government, and it sounded like it was maybe going to be promising to them anyway. But that after Ambassador Rice's testimony on those five Sunday talk shows, that went all to hell. And the Libyan president was made to look like a fool in front of his own people.
And that's when he got really ripped from all of the false information that was being passed out, that he delayed the access that the FBI wanted to get in and have it be a secure site so that they could do their investigation. And at the end of the day, it was about 2 to 3 weeks before the FBI was able to get in there, and so the site was compromised. They couldn't get a clean read on what happened. So here we have Susan Rice, dereliction of duty, not doing her homework, not getting the facts, but espousing such trivial garbage. But what's interesting is that the American people, not I, believed it. And we end up with a site that could have gotten us some information on who, what, and why from the FBI, and we didn't have that opportunity because we made the Libyan president look so bad. He was not happy. And that's what, you know, from Gregory Hicks, it just, he had to deal with some of that. And I just am so fired up that this administration would compromise a site when we had four Americans, two SEALs, and an ambassador and a technician there that could have lived.
Yep. Indeed. And I have a question for you, Eliza, and for the chat room. And I'm totally dumb on this. I'm completely ignorant of the protocol here, so I have to ask. Normally, is the FBI sent to another country to investigate things? Or
That's
is there another? Is there another? I mean, should it have been a military investigation? I mean, normally, is the FBI sent to a foreign country to investigate a crime?
It's a good question. For them to be in a foreign country, I thought FBI was mostly here, but you're right. That's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that. But from the testimony that I heard from Hicks, they were the ones that were declined immediate access. And it was all part of Susan Rice and Hillary Clinton in terms of what she said. What difference does it make?
Oh.
And they actually played it in the hearings. I was surprised to see that.
Yeah.
And to get Hicks's response to that, and he was floored. He was literally floored. So we've got so much dereliction of duty across all of it. I'm getting a note here from my producer. The two SEALs did arrive on time to save 30 others, and they sacrificed themselves. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yep.
Yes, they did.
They sacrificed themselves. They even, I think, did some lasers, hoping that some aircraft overhead would, they thought help was coming. God bless them, and I know they're in a peaceful place, but it just, go away. Sorry.
Yeah, and Diane is saying in the chat room that she thinks, you know, the FBI is supposed to be on our land, and the CIA should do the international, she would think. I don't, you know, that's yet another question. You know, does their decision to send the FBI, is that part of Obama's desire to downplay any military people in Benghazi and try to make it look like we're just non-threatening people and, you know, we're willing to let the February 17th Martyrs Brigade take care of our people? And that comes up later, too. Okay, so let me get through this because I still got – there's some good things that I want to get through, but it's – so, okay.
Okay.
Okay, so here's another homework thing, is that I heard Patrick Kennedy mentioned a lot. Now – I've heard him called Undersecretary Kennedy, and then I also heard one of them say the Undersecretary of Management. So, was Patrick Kennedy at that time, was he the Undersecretary of Management? Because I heard both mentioned, Undersecretary Kennedy And then I heard the Undersecretary of Management mentioned, and I'm wondering if they're the same guy, and because there was different things brought up about... Okay, Smokey says yes. Okay, thank you, Smokey. Okay, but he was mentioned a lot, and Hicks said that he has to bear some of the responsibility. So we need Patrick Kennedy to testify as well. Okay, so then let's see. I'm not sure if it was Nordstrom. Tammy Duckworth had asked Nordstrom about training, but somebody, I'm not sure which of the three gentlemen brought up that the Undersecretary of Management was there in previous crises. And so this is kind of big. I put a there because apparently the Undersecretary of Management has been in other crises such as this, and that goes to the narrative of, you know, I'm noticing in these hearings that I've heard even ISA, even Chaffetz saying, you know, well, we want to do this so that it won't happen again. You know, well, apparently this particular undersecretary has been in other situations like this, and apparently he hasn't learned his lesson. So was that Patrick Kennedy that has been in those other crises? And apparently they haven't learned their lesson there. So what makes us think, to me, this isn't about, you know, to me, I want retribution. I want justice. I want those that are responsible to be held accountable, period. This is America. This is 2013. We've been in this a long time. We should have learned our lessons a long time ago. So don't tell me it's about learning lessons so it won't happen again the next time. No, 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 no. I want people held accountable this time. I want Barack Obama and I want Hillary Clinton held accountable, and I'm not going to stop until that happens, period.
Oh, I think we need to make it broader than that, not just the two of them. I think we need to take it all the way to Panetta, Rice, every one of them. They're all
yes.
Need to be held accountable.
Yes.
Every one of them.
Yes. Because
they failed to do their jobs. They failed to save these people. They failed to stand up and be accountable and make sure that they manage. Where was Obama through all of this? Nobody's even asked yet. Where was he at? He was sleeping off his whatever so that he could get out on the campaign trail and make some more money in Las Vegas the next day.
and subpoena his butt. Okay, even if he claims executive privilege, they should at least follow form and subpoena Obama to a hearing. We need to hear from him. He's supposed to be the frigging commander-in-chief, and even if he can claim executive privilege, get him on record claiming executive privilege over this. Dang it.
Well, I don't know where executive privilege comes in, but quite frankly, if we can impeach some previous presidents, we can impeach him. The only fear I've got is the impeachment of Clinton didn't do a damn thing. He stayed in office. I mean, everybody seems to be ecstatic about the hearings, thinking this is going to get him impeached. I think he's going to be one of those that stays in office, so God only knows.
Well, I'm going to keep pressuring. I'm not letting this go. This brought Nixon down. Watergate brought Nixon down, and nobody died.
That's all right. That's right.
Okay, so Justin Amash, he came next, and he was asking about not being able to read the classified ARB report. Then he yielded to Chaffetz, who asked Hicks if Libyans were asked permission to do a flyover. And they were asked and given, the Libyans were asked and they gave permission to do the drone, the UAV flyover, but they were not asked permission for overflights. So who would have asked them for permission to do overflights? And that's a big thing that came out in this hearing too, was that if they had just gotten some, you know, big planes to go down there and make a lot of noise, that could have stopped some of the guys from getting murdered. But that didn't happen, and you wonder why it didn't happen, because it could have. Okay, so then we have Robin Kelly next, and she asked Hicks if he knows why the four military members were not allowed to go. He didn't know, and then she went on with a lot of propaganda. Then she yielded to Gerald Connolly again. That ugly. He was just partisan. He tried to downplay the Libyan president. He brought up the video again, and he brought up some New York Times article, and he tried to assert that the video had something to do with it, and Hicks disagreed. Okay, so then you have Paul Gosar next, and he asked Hicks about Rice again. And Assistant Secretary Jones, the phone call with Jones and Hicks came up, and Hicks said that he began to receive counseling, okay, after he started questioning Ambassador Rice's, you know, narrative on those Sunday talk shows. That's when he began to receive counseling from Beth Jones about his management style. And that's when he said that President Mugariev, that he was insulted in front of his own people, and that's what impeded the FBI investigation. Hicks was never, okay, now when the FBI got there, they got to Tripoli, and they were waiting. The FBI was waiting in Tripoli to be able to go to Benghazi. So while they were in Tripoli, the FBI, they were questioning different witnesses. They were doing what they could without being able to go to Benghazi. But Hicks was never interviewed by the FBI, he said. Okay, then Stephen Horsford was next, Democrat. You know, he brings up the ARB thing and makes it a big thing. He brings up twice the nine. We've already had nine oversight hearings. You know, he brought that up twice. He brought up that costs money. You know, he was just very partisan. ISA asked him to yield, but then he said no. His thing was GOP cuts. But then Patrick Meehan was next, and he brought it up right away about Charlene Lamb's testimony about how it wasn't budget cuts that was the reason for the decreased security in Benghazi. And then it was asked, how was Stevens in an increasingly unsafe place on an iconic day? And then they went back to the August 31st when they cut back security. Then Nordstrom was asked if they had any confidence in the locals. Now, I'm sure the locals is the February 17th Martyrs Brigade. Nordstrom said no. Well, why would you have any confidence in the Martyrs Brigade? And then Nordstrom was asked if he reported that to Washington. Yes, he did. And he brought up previous security incidents in Libya and was asked, is it reasonable to think that these aren't indicators? You know, basically what he was asked was, okay, we've had all these security incidents. What, some 270, Eliza, was it, that there was over 270 security incidents for that previous year in Benghazi. So isn't it reasonable to assume that we might have a problem here?
Only to you and I, guess, and a handful of others that think logically and put two and two together and get four. Obviously, they don't. Again, I think it all comes down to the grand plan that they had, either the blind shake transfer or the gun running. They didn't want too many witnesses.
Exactly.
And it was probably both. Two for the price of one.
Yeah, and I'm gonna go through this fast. I'm not gonna go through everything, but I'm only gonna go through what I have in big letters. It came out that when Scott Desjarlais, he asked Hicks about his treatment after meeting with Jason Chaffetz, and that's when Beth Jones had pulled him aside and talked to him about his management style, and he said that after Stephen's funeral, he got a blistering critique of his management style from Beth Jones. Hicks was treated differently after questioning Rice's testimony. He was demoted, and it was called a no-fault curtailment. He said basically he was demoted from deputy chief of mission in Libya to a desk officer. And then Blake Fahrenthold said they threw him under the bus. Let's see. I'm trying to get to the end of this because I know it's 4:03. Nordstrom was told to stop complaining, or he got the feeling that he should stop complaining. And then you have Danny Davis, who was a Democrat. He brings up the undercover guy. Remember the guy on the Fox News that was in kind of silhouette? He was like the whistleblower, but we didn't know who he was, and his voice was disguised.
Yep, that's that Mark, isn't it?
Yeah, so Danny Davis brought him up, and he tried to refute his testimony with a response from Hagel. Okay, the undercover guy says that the plane could have gotten there in time, but Hagel says no. So it seems like another Democrat believes in the top military Express, and then he yielded to Maloney. Oh, before I want to get to this thing about Maloney, because I have a boom on this one. Okay, wait, let me see if there's anything important before that. Let's see. Oh, yes, there is. Okay, before I get to Carolyn Maloney, this was my favorite part of the testimony. All right. Carrie Bentivoglio yielded to Gowdy, who then, and then it was Ron DeSantis. Finally, Representative Ron DeSantis, he asked about, okay, this is the biggest point in the whole day to me. Ron DeSantis asked about the stand-down order and who gave it to Lieutenant Colonel Gibson. He specifically asked Gibson that and waited for an answer. Hicks said he didn't know who gave Gibson the stand-down order, but he says you're going to have to ask Lieutenant Colonel Gibson. Okay, so that's an in to have Lieutenant Colonel Gibson. That's who needs to be. That's the very next person who needs to be questioned. Is Lieutenant Colonel Gibson got the stand down order? Who did he get it from? Okay, so let me get to the part about Carolyn Maloney, little heifer. Oh my goodness. Okay. Let's see.
Oh, Smokey. Oh. Maloney looked like Tammy Faye Baker's corpse. Ooh. Ooh. I didn't see her, but wow.
Oh, I just don't like her. Okay, it came out from Jim Jordan that security was not only denied, but it was reduced. Oh, and Clinton, Hillary Clinton tried to blame it on Nordstrom and Hicks. That's another thing that came out, was that Hillary Clinton, she tried to blame this thing on Nordstrom and Hicks and their people. No, 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 no. Then Chaffetz brought up the ARB report, page 37, and the ARB report said there was no evidence of undue delays. That's not true. It came out. Chaffetz actually got a little choked up about the ARB report saying that all were evacuated. Well, all except four. That's when Jason Chaffetz got a little bit choked up. Then Maloney comes up. This is a good part of the hearing. She was being very partisan. She accused the GOP of not including the Democrats. ISIS stopped her right there, and he says that they fully complied. So, you know, Maloney and ISIS were disagreeing. There was a time that they had to stop the hearing. They had to stop the time because Maloney and ISIS were disagreeing. The Dems were complaining that only ISIS met with Thompson. Okay, so basically Carolyn Maloney was trying to say that it was partisanship, and the GOP wasn't allowing her, you know, the Dems to get the same testimony that the GOP had. Boom. ISIS asked all three of the whistleblowers if the GOP had ever stopped them from talking to the Democrats. No, no, and no. Then Maloney admitted that the Dems asked Thompson if he would meet with them, and he said no. So basically, here you have Carolyn Maloney, a Democrat. She's trying to accuse the GOP of not letting them meet with Thompson when basically the Democrats tried to meet with Thompson, and he's the one that said he wouldn't meet. It was his decision. He said he didn't want to meet with the Democrats. But Carolyn Maloney tried to blame it on the GOP. She got caught, and I was happy to see that. So that didn't work on her part. Okay, I'm at the end, and I'll let you have the rest of it. Gowdy asked about the Benghazi not being safe enough for the FBI, but safe enough for the diplomats. And then it came out that they went to Benghazi because of Secretary Clinton. They were allowed to stay below safe specs because of Clinton.
Right. I've got some information on that. You're talking about the standards of the facilities that they're supposed to have?
Yes. You go ahead, and I'll be right back.
All right. You've done a great timeline on all of this. But basically, there are standards that every facility, anybody that's supposed to be residing in them, are supposed to have. In a written testimony, Nordstrom detailed that the Benghazi consulate was one of the rare locations with high critical threats in all categories at the time of the terrorist attack on September 11th. And security standards for diplomatic facilities are established by the Overseas Security Policy Board, OSPB, and the Secure Embassy Construction and Counterterrorism Act of 1999. So they had these standards in place. So as a result of critical threats, in all categories, the Benghazi consulate met none of the standards. The only person who has the authority to waive security standards and approve occupancy with such high threat levels is the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. This responsibility cannot be delegated to anybody else in the State Department. That alone should indict her. That alone should put her head right there on the chopping block. According to the Government Accountability Office, six threat categories inform the SETL, international terrorism, indigenous terrorism, political violence, crime, human intelligence, and technical threat. A rating is then assigned for each category on a four-level scale. Critical, grave impact on American diplomats. High, serious impact on American diplomats. Medium, moderate impact on American diplomats. Low, minor impact on American diplomats. The protective measures for each post are dictated by the post's overall threat level. At the time of the Benghazi attack, only a small number of the 264 overseas diplomatic posts were rated high or critical. In all of the threat categories, our posts in Benghazi and Tripoli, two of the 14 posts were rated. Oh, boy. Did I lose the last of that? Well, I flipped my papers around. Now it's a mystery what it was rated.
Oops.
Yeah, oops. I'll have to find it. But anyways, that tells you a whole lot about where this was at. Let's see. Nope. All right. I've lost page two of this. I'll have to find it for you and bring that to you next week. But obviously it was highly rated as one of the serious ones, one of the critical or high. You got to believe it was probably a critical. If it was that bad and Clinton was the only one that could override it, it had to have been rated as critical. Now, I want to take you a little bit different avenue now just to kind of give you some perspective on all of this. I've been reading I just kind of got kicked off in reading Willful Blindness, a memoir of the jihad by Andy McCarthy. He had a couple of interesting paragraphs I want to read to you, if that's all right, Lucia. Are you finished with your timeline?
Oh, I'm finished. You go, girl.
Okay. These paragraphs talk about the FBI, the intelligence that we have, and how local law enforcement to state to federal law enforcement, none of them understand how to do this kind of work. So let me read what he wrote. During the late, and he's talking about the blind shake and the 9/11 and the first attack on the Twin Towers. During the late morning of Friday, February 26, 1993, Islamic militants had driven a Ryder van containing a 1,400-pound urea nitrate bomb into the underground parking garage of the World Trade Center. At a few minutes after noon, the explosive detonated. The hyper-intensive shockwave bored a six-story canyon into the bowels of the complex. Seven people were killed, one of the six officially listed murder victims having been well along in pregnancy. Over 1,000 were injured, and the structural damage from a device that had cost only a few thousand dollars to build would cost nearly $1 billion to repair. The bombing had not been one-off. The jihadists were laboring toward more spectacular exploits. As Americans struggled to come to terms with what the audacious Twin Towers attack implied about their safety, members of the same cabal, far from resting on their laurels, conducted surveillance on their next targets. The United States complex, along with the East River, the Lincoln and Holland tunnels, through which each day hundreds of thousands of commuters cross the Hudson River between New Jersey and the West Side, and the Jacob K. Javits Federal Building, home to the FBI's New York headquarters. For these Islamic radicals planned simultaneous bombs. Wow. That plan had been thwarted. That wow was commentary. That plan had been thwarted. It stands as the only one of the many jihadist conspiracies in the pre-9/11 years to be foiled by anything other than dumb luck. Why?
because of human intelligence. The government had been fortunate enough to have the help of a confidential informant, an enigmatic former Egyptian army officer named Imad Salem. He had infiltrated the organization, enabling the JTTF, Joint Terror Task Force, to catch the terrorist in flagrant delicto on videotape mixing bomb components in a dank Queens safe house. This was the investigative coup that brought us to the war room on that steamy July morning. And he has some commentary earlier in the chapter about war room. Here it's all lawyers and attorneys in what's called a war room. Amazing. Drawing up subpoenas, poring over transcripts, and startling recorded conversations, and envisioning an indictment that would tie it all together. That, though, was the problem. There was a lot more to tie together than the atrocities, real and contemplated, that had Americans reeling in the early months of 1993. The FBI and the JTTF, it turned out, had been well aware of the jihad organization for a half decade, long before 1993. The aspiring holy warriors had been active in the United States since at least 1988, preparing and training for a global jihad, including domestic strikes against American economic, political, and military targets. They were led by a firebrand cleric named Omar Abdel Rahman, better known as the Blind Sheikh, who'd memorized the Quran after falling sightless at age 4, going on to a renowned as scholar of Islam and the international emir of jihad. In 1990, Abdel Rahman was issued a visa. This is just one of the parts. He was issued a visa despite appearing on the State Department's terrorist watch list. He relocated to Brooklyn and later to Jersey City, bringing his holy war directly into the heart of its ultimate target. Ironically, this should have been a boon. As long as he was inside the United States, the government had a chance to monitor this master terrorist in a way it could not in militant haunts like Cairo, Khartoum, and Peshawar. On our own turf, Abdel Rahman and his acolytes could be spied on. The government could identify their associates, map their network, and thwart their violent intentions, and that, indeed, is what happened. Salem's infiltration of Abdel Rahman's organization had not begun with the stunning events of 1993. It had started much earlier, in 1991. In fact, Salem's penetration had been so thoroughly successful that he had had intimate access to Abdel Rahman himself. Almost from the start, he had furthermore been taken into confidence of the Blind Sheikh's circle of radicals who were talking about and training for bombings and political assassinations. Here's where I really want you to pay attention. It is not enough to say the federal government should have seen the World Trade Center attack coming. We did see it coming. If not the target, then at the very least, the strong potential for a bombing. We had moreover been in a decent position to stop it, but we failed. And we failed precisely because the tools and assumptions of law enforcement are not suitable for religious motivated war. Think about that. Think about that. Law enforcement, is most comfortable and most effective. Hold on. I had to lubricate the pipes. Law enforcement is most comfortable and most effective solving completed crimes. Solving completed crimes. When it comes to preventing future crimes, especially mass slaughter attacks that are better understood as acts of war, the cynosure of law enforcement culture is not success. It is the avoidance of accountable failure. And now that the time was past due for decisive action, that culture was front and center. I thought those last two paragraphs said a whole lot. Law enforcement is for completed crimes, solving completed crimes.
they knew about all of that. Did they know about any of this prior to Chris Stevens going over there? Yeah, I think so. Did Chris Stevens know? Don't know. Probably we'll never know, like I think Diane had said in the chat room. Sadly, we'll never know the truth on where this all goes, because I don't know about you, Lucha, I personally don't think we're going to get the truth out of the hearings. I don't know how many hearings. Do you know how many hearings there are going to be?
I don't know, and I don't have confidence that Daryl Issa is going to really do much, because where's the accountability on Fast and Furious?
Well, you know, if they bring in the right people to interview, maybe, but I think one of the reasons Mike Rogers didn't want to have the hearings is because he's accountable as well. I think there's a lot of internal people that are accountable, knew about what was going on, knew that it was happening beforehand, and I think we're going to probably be skipping over a lot of that and never know. I don't think the truth is going to come out.
That's why we need a select committee.
Oh, something on that order.
Oh, my gosh. That even felt weird.
Well,
no,
you know,
but
we've got
Representative...
Go ahead.
Oh, my God. Jinx, yum, yum, a Coke. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I yum, me a Coke.
Sorry.
My sister and I used to do that. Okay, so Representative Frank Wolf, he's got House Resolution Bill 36 that's calling for a select committee. And I am 100% behind that, because they would have subpoena power. Now, we've had different hearings about this, but I don't trust ISIS. Sorry. ISIS is having these hearings, but I don't trust him. I don't trust him to hold anyone accountable, primarily because no one's been held accountable for Fast and Furious. So
right.
I would like to see a select committee for Benghazi, just one committee. Forget all these other guys that want to get their little hands in the fire. They need a select committee with subpoena powers and take it from there.
Well, think how long we've taken to get to this point. It's just going to lose all of its value and knowledge and understanding. If they're not going to get to it this time, I doubt they'll get to it again. We've got one caller that's wanting to ask a question. We got a few minutes left. You want to just bring them in and see what we've got?
Sure.
All right. Let's see who this is. Well, area code 347, are you there? Let's see. I'm not sure I've got it working yet. Come on. Area code 347, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. This is Ben Solomon.
And who is this, please?
Anyway, well...
He said it was Ben Solomon. Are Ben Solomon in the chat room?
He hung up. Just as I brought him in, he hung up. All right. Well, he got scared of us, I guess. I guess he got scared of us. But anyways, I would love to have a select committee, if that's the answer. But we're already, 8, 9 months out, and we still don't have the answers. And we've got these three brave souls that are standing up to the questions and having to go through all of this again. You know, at some point you start to forget some of the details to it. So at some point, I don't know if we're going to be able to get to the real facts. If this thing plays out for the next 2 years, you know, where Hillary that's RWJ. Okay, he's calling back. Oh, he just disconnected again. What's going on?
Do, 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 do. Call back in, Ben, if you can. We want to hear what you have to say. We have, I think, 6 minutes left.
RWJ Benjamin Solomon. I guess he's trying to call back in, but it came in and it flashed in. All right. Well, if you can, in the next 5 minutes, come on in, and we'll try to bring you in. But, I just am fearful. Lucha, just, you know, some of it's for show. Some of it's just let's see. Is he there? All right. Let's see if we can try him again. Is this RWJ?
Sorry about that. My phone is driving me crazy in terms of like his ending. Whenever I try to get the screen back on, it just the stupid call just ends. But the thing I just wanted to say basically is, you know, like I find it interesting how you mentioned Benghazi Gate, which I think is a reaction, which I think is a reaction of Obama supporting, like, these, like, I think that, well, I shouldn't say reaction, but largely a result of Obama supporting this Arab Spring policy, of which is largely, which is basically dominated by Islamists, especially the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, so what do you think about that?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. The Muslim Brotherhood is just taking over, and they're in our government. We've had quite a few shows on all of that, and I was going to try it. You know, if we hadn't gone into all of the Benghazi hearing, I would have had some information on that. We might make another show down the road here on that.
Yes.
But
although I have another thing, although what do you think about, like, even with all that, like how Obama tried to blame it on a silly filmmaker who made a film that portrayed Mala in a way Muslims find offensive? Or silly YouTube thing, you know, that, like, was a couple minutes or so, you know?
Yep, and I'm afraid the director or whoever that guy was is still in prison to this day. So how is it that doing, what, a five-minute video? There was never anything but that. So if that's all the guy did and did a five-minute video mocking Muhammad, why is it he's in prison?
This is them fighting for democracy. This is them fighting for democracy, all right, because that's what we're told. It's
well,
they want to have democracy, and we see Mohamed Morsi, who rose out of that, killing his people. Obama gives him F-16 jets, you know.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
It's
the United Nations
coming in and mandating the freedom of speech not being allowed for us because we can't do anything against Islam.
Pretty much, yeah, because you see, when Mubarak was cracking down on his people, he that was horrible. We had to get rid of him. Mohamed Morsi, that's the same thing. That's okay, because he's Muslim Brotherhood. And you see that, when Obama promised to repair America's image, you see the liberal Egyptians and the non-Islamist Egyptians are mad at Obama for giving Mohamed Morsi all these F-16 jets while he kills his own people. It's, like, ridiculous.
You're singing to the choir here. You're absolutely singing to the choir, and we don't understand how he's allowed to get away with it either, and except that he's got his full administration supporting him. So what we have to do as citizens, as citizens, we've got to stand up against it. We've got to continue to contact our congressmen and senators and everyone in between and let them know that this is still a republic, this has still got a constitution, and we will follow it. But you see where they broke a whole slew of laws and went against the Constitution by way of what they did in Boston, by breaking into everybody's home just so they could search for this jihadi. They threw everybody out of their home without any search warrants. And now they're using that as a pretense with this whole kidnapping of these three girls. I hate to go down that path with the last few minutes, but they're breaking laws and Constitution all over the place. And they're allowed to get away with it.
Well, you see, right now, we don't want to seem too Islamophobic with the whole Boston attack thing, you know, and some people want us to appease, I'm sure there's some people on the politically correct left who would be happy to get us in the war with Russia to support Chechnya in the hope that Muslim terrorists won't attack us.
Yeah.
Islamophobia, I'm sure they could stuff that in their Quran. There's nobody that has an irrational fear of Islam. We see what Islam is doing nationwide. Worldwide, we see what Islam is doing. Islamophobia, they can stuff it.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right, Ben. The whole Arab uprising, the whole Arab Spring, it's a Muslim Brotherhood uprising, pure and simple.
Yeah.
You know, it's all designated for one purpose, and that's for the purpose of the Islamic Caliphate. And I'll tell you what, behead me because I will never submit.
Amen. And we've only got about a minute left, so we're going to have to close out the show. If you want to give us a call next week, we would love to chat with you a little bit longer, okay?
Yeah.
All
great
right.
Great call, Ben. Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking.
All right. We want to just run down the chat room. We've got, NMO Gangsta, East Anglican EDL, Jeff, Echo, ECCO, Freedom Wings, Diane, Golf Dogs, Hold Your Awakens, and Poppy, and Red Fox Blogger. She's got going by a new name, Cal. Robert Ryan, RWJ Benjamin, that just called us. Thank you for that. Smokey in Texas. And hopefully and a handful of people that are just listening in. So welcome. We are so glad all of you are here. So glad you joined us tonight. And God bless all of you. God bless America, and Lucha, I'll let you take it out.
Well, you just said it. God bless you all. We love you all. Thank you so much for being here, and may we all give glory to God for the blessings we have.
Amen to that. And we will be here, same bat channel, same bat station, next week. See you all then. Have a great week, everybody.